I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is Little Atoms, a radio show about ideas and culture, with me, Neil Denny.
On today's show, Sinead Gleeson on her debut novel, Hagstone.
Sinead Gleeson's essay collection, Constellations, Reflections from Life, was published by Picadore in 2019 and won Non-Fiction Book of the Year at the 2019 Irish Book Awards and the Dalkey Literary Award for Emerging Writer. It was shortlisted for the Rathbones Folio Prize, the James Tate Black Memorial Prize, and Michelle Dion Prize. She is the editor of The Long Gaze Back, an anthology of Irish women writers, The Glass Shore, short stories by women writers from the north of Ireland, and The Art of Glimpse, 100 Irish short stories. She also collaborates with artists and musicians with commissions from the Wellcome Collection, BBC, Frieze, and various galleries. In 2022, with Kim Gordon, she co-edited This Woman's Work, Essays on Music. And today we're here to talk about Sinead's debut novel, Hagstone. Sinead, welcome to Little Atoms.
I'm delighted to finally be here, Neil. Thanks for having me.
Tell us first of all then how you would describe this novel.
Oh, I guess Hagstone, it's a book about art and desire and money and precariousness, landscape, maybe community, with a little side helping of autocracy. It's probably all of those things. It's a lot of things, I think.
So how did this novel come together around all of your other writing?
This book actually started a very long time ago, an alarmingly long time ago. It predates Constellations and even some of the anthologies, because I do think you need a lot of energy for novels and a lot of focus, a lot of immersion, which I didn't have for various reasons at the time. I've always been freelance. I've done lots of different things, and you know, journalism and radio. So finding the time, and also having a young family at the time, I just couldn't find the focus for it. So it started with, there's a sound in the book that only some people can hear that happens in this island setting. The book is set in Ireland, and it started very much with the sound. And then I would, you know, I'd take a run at it for a while and then not know where it was going to go. I always had the sound and I always had Nell, the main protagonist, but I wasn't sure after that what was going to happen. But I knew it was going to be a book that was very atmospheric, that was very rooted in landscape, that was probably would have elements of, you know, it would nod to folklore and history, but it's I think it's very much about trying to make art, trying to make a living, trying to have the kind of life that you want to have, trying to survive when it's difficult to do those things, especially if you work in the arts, as you and I both know. So I think it's about all those things. So it started about 12 years ago, and I just kept putting it aside, getting distracted by some of the books you mentioned in your introduction, then Constellations. And it's only really in the last sort of 4 or 5 years I really went back to it and said, OK, I have to finish this book, because I kind of wanted to know what was going to happen. You know, I wanted to know the ending. I wanted to know what was going to happen to Nell, what was going to happen in the story. So I couldn't let go. And believe me, I tried. But it didn't let go of me.
So we'll come back to the sound in a while. But Nell, first of all, so she is, as you've mentioned, it's a third person narration, and the focus does shift to some other characters at certain points, but in the main, Nell is the main protagonist. So tell us a bit more about who she is.
Well, Nell is an artist who makes, I suppose, what you would probably call, you know, maybe ephemeral or impermanent art, in that she makes durational art, she makes land art, she does performance art, and all of these things are very much connected to the setting of the island. So a lot of her work, like she will make art that's on the beaches or the mountains. As she talks about wanting to make a project in the lighthouse, which is kind of a durational thing where she'll be up in the sort of the tower of the lighthouse. So all of this work is difficult to make. And this kind of work can be difficult to fund. As we know, it's not the kind of work you can sell. There aren't multiple prints of it. It's sort of one off. And she's interested in that ephemerality. I mean, there's scenes in the book where she was engaged in a project on the tides and people wanted to film it. And she was like, you know, she says, and I quote, "Put your fucking phones away." So I think a lot of her work is about being present, being in the moment. It's very rooted to the land, the traditions of the landscape, the kind of maybe the folklore and myth that's attached to the land. And I guess a lot of the landscape where I live, even though I never say that this is an Irish island. So I think Nell is a figure who, she is an artist first and foremost, and she is a woman who happens to like living on her own. And I think that she has this fear that if she gets involved with anything outside of that, that it will compromise her ability to make art, or she'll be distracted. So she is a bit of a voyeur. She has, I think, desire is a central part of the book. She's engages and has a lot of relationships, very short term ones, with men on the island and men who visit the island. And I think part of that is sort of keeping herself away from relationships because she's very, very committed to her art. And then, of course, all of that goes by the by when she gets a letter left outside her door one day from a mysterious group of women who want her to make a piece of art for them.
So this art is all, it's fictional, but it's all explicitly influenced by the art of real artists. So tell us something about some of the people who influenced it.
Yeah, I mean, the book, the epigraph of the book is from, I hear the voices of those who will not be drowned, which is, it's a line from Benjamin Britten's Peter Grimes opera. And it's people may know it because it's inscribed on Maggie Hambling's scallop, which is on Alborough Beach. I love that. It's a giant sort of, and controversial to some people, sculpture of a shell. I've also really loved Maggie Hambling's wave paintings. And I thought when I was writing, there's a lot of water and sea and currents and waves in this book, and I thought a lot about Maggie Hambling's art. But there's a lot of other, I mean, people who, especially the scenes of Nell carving lines on the sand, and you know, Atsuko Tanaka would be somebody, Lita Albuquerque's Spine of the Earth, Cecilia Vicuno, I saw some of her work in the US a couple of years ago, and you know, maybe Robert Smithson's Spiral Jetty. So some of those kind of big land artists, but also, you know, I've worked with Irish artists myself whose work is kind of often connected to either land or the sort of the feminine or the mythological or the spiritual. And I think, you know, people like Dorothy Cross, the great Irish artist who's made, you know, she's made basking sharks statues and curraghs of basking sharks. And a lot of her stuff is about flotsam and things that washes up, you know, the land where she lives in Connemara on the west coast of Ireland. So I wanted Nell to be a kind of figure like that. So I've made up a lot of the art, but she's very influenced by it. At the back of the book, there's I quote and talk about some of the artists who feature in that work, because I've written a lot about art and I've worked with artists. And she was always going to be an artist, because I think it's a very specific kind of life, especially. I mean, publishing and writing is one arm of culture, if you like. But, you know, you deal with publishers and you deal with, go out into the world, and there are literary festivals. But there's something much more, I always think something much more solitary, and something more committed about being an artist. And that it's, especially Nell's work, as I've said to somebody else, it's not the kind of work you can put a red sticker on. You know, it's very difficult for her to keep making that work, but it's all she knows how to do. And I think also the idea in the book is that whether you stay on an island like this or whether you leave, but for her, the setting and space is her canvas, it's her influence, it's her inspiration. So she, in some way, she can't separate herself from the island and from that, because that's where she associates making her art and where all her creativity and inspiration comes from.
Well, one of the problems of an ephemeral piece of art on a beach being not something you can stick a red sticker on is she's not going to make very much money from it. So what's her day-to-day life like on the island? How does she sort of scrape a living?
Yeah, it's quite hard scrabble, actually. And you know, this is, I think all of us know, it's very difficult to make a living in the arts. Everybody's doing multiple jobs. And in this case, this is an island. So, you know, it's seasonal, you're relying on tourists in the summer, and then the weather is very harsh and unrelenting. So, you know, there are days when boats don't arrive, as it is the case with any islands off, you know, Ireland or the UK, if small populations that live in them, smaller ones anyway. So for her day to day, it's basically she cleans cottages in the summer. She occasionally picks up the odd shift in the pub sometimes. She's a very good gardener, and she sort of makes things from the garden to try and occasionally sell to people on the island. But a lot of it, again, is just trying to live extremely frugally. She's very self-sufficient, and she's living off maybe sort of past work and past bursaries. But her life has sort of changed, because she's also realised, like a lot of, you know, the art world is complicated. There can be problems with places you commission. You don't want to necessarily go and work for certain galleries or certain institutions. She feels she's quite a moral person in some ways. So I think it's a very difficult life for her in terms of day-to-day survival, as it can be when you live in remote places and the weather isn't brilliant. But she's determined to make it work. And she's quite, I mean, I'm painting a pessimistic picture over here, but Nell's very self-contained. She's very happy living the life. She doesn't want complicatedness. And yet, as we find throughout the book, she can sometimes make things a little bit complicated for herself when she gets involved with other people, whether that's groups of people or other men.
Well, I wanted to talk about how she's perceived by other islanders, because there's a point in the book where one of the other characters, who we'll talk about later on, mentions that the other islanders see her as a bit weird. She's sort of taken aback and a bit offended by this, but we have seen earlier in the book, and we know that there's an earlier incident as well, Nell just sort of like hanging out outside someone's house, peeping through their windows.
Yeah.
So tell us something about her sort of interactions with the other islanders.
Yeah, I mean, I think Nell is very driven by desire, and there's lots of, you know, she gets involved with two different men in the book, an islander who's returned, and then later this very famous American actor who comes to the island later in the story. But in the interim, she's been with a lot of men on the island, and she's a very physical and kind of person who's interested in desire and the body. But her desire is a very autonomous thing in that, you know, you want to be on your own, but you like to sleep with people. So that's a difficult conundrum, that if you want to stay away from everybody, make your art, not get involved in relationships, you know, not have babies, get married, do any of that stuff. You want to live this very solitary life. And yet we all need people in our lives. And in Nell's case, it's sort of, she's kind of caught between this, how do I be on my own, make my art, but also I like to kind of hang out with people. I like to be with men. I like for that to kind of happen. She overhears some of the men in the local pub one night when she's in the kind of the very old fashioned toilet cubicle. I think it's avocado colored. And she hears them all kind of discussing her and her body, but also, you know, more or less commenting on how she looks and how they think she'd be in bed, but also thinking that she's weird and possibly witchy. And that's the kind of thing that happens to, I think, a lot of women who are independent, don't conform, don't necessarily live the societal gendered expectations, don't necessarily live the kind of the heteronormative standards. And we're going all the way back to witches and healers and all of that kind of stuff. And I think that women who don't conform can sometimes be viewed with strangeness, especially if they're, it's not even enough to do any of those big things like get married or settle down. It's just if you're just not nice, or you just don't play ball, or you don't feel you have to accommodate these people or be nice to them. So I think they don't like that she keeps herself to herself and she doesn't engage with a lot of them, apart from taking what she wants from them and then maybe casting them aside. So yeah, some people think she's suspicious, but she doesn't, I don't think she pretends it doesn't bother her, but at the same time, she's quite comfortable living where she lives, because I think the island is her and she is the island in many ways.
Now, I had a bit of a oh my God moment a while ago when you said you don't actually ever mention that it's an Irish island, because It is so obviously, vividly, recognisably an Irish island when you're actually reading the story.
I've been to lots of Scottish islands, and I mean, I long to go to Shetland, and I said this to somebody recently, when I was away on one of the Irish islands, Inishere. It's the smallest of the three Aran islands, which are off the coast of Galway. Very beautiful. And I'd gone for one night to stay on Inishmore. There's a beautiful, very famous ring fort on the top of this kind of stone structure. And you have to stay overnight because the ferries don't work for times and coming back. And I remember taking a bit of footage and posting on Instagram, and Amy Liptrot said, that sounds really like Orkney. That sounds exactly like Orkney. And she was saying that the sound was the caves underneath the cliff and the water kind of rolling in. And obviously this book was in progress by that point, but it just struck me that lots of islands and these islands are very, very similar. Somebody else said to me, oh, it sounds a bit like Faro. I haven't been there either, but maybe it is. But yeah, I don't say, it's also 12 hours off the coast, and we don't have any islands, inhabited ones anyway, that are 12 hours off the Irish coast. So maybe I wanted it to be a little bit more unidentifiable. I mean, maybe it could be off the coast of America or somewhere in the Pacific. I don't know, but the terrible weather probably gives it away, right?
Yeah, that was it. And that was the guys at the pub as well, I think. That's
of course, yeah. You've probably met those guys in Irish.
Yeah. The noise, is this ever present? Well, not ever present, that's not true. There's this noise that periodically appears. And it's, first of all, it affects women on the island more than men.
Yeah.
And all women on the island. But it also seems, it almost seems to make the island alive, like it's a sort of living, breathing thing. Tell us something You mentioned that this idea of the noise was sort of like one of the earliest ideas to come for the novel. So tell us something more about what this noise is and what it sort of represents in the novel.
Yeah, well, I'm really interested in this idea. You've probably heard about this because it doesn't just happen in Ireland and it is a real thing, which is this hum sound. And we do have that. There is a reported case in County Kerry in Ireland of this noise, this unidentified noise that only some people can hear and people struggle to. There are cases in the UK, I've definitely read about it all over the world where, you know, people describe it as it can be like a hum or a kind of a subwoofer or a generator or a buzz or a mosquito kind of sound. But only some people can hear it. And I'm in the same way that I'm interested in, you know, in constellations, I talked a little bit about people who can see ghosts and people who can't. I'm really interested in perception and who hears what. And often it's not that there's anything spooky or strange going on. It's just that we are so distracted all the time that a lot of us aren't present, aren't focusing on things, are missing things in life, are not good at observing, whether that's, you know, visually or hourly. And for me, the setting of the landscape of this book, it is so much of Ireland in many ways in that it's, and yet I've read tales like this from all over the world. It's really connected to folklore and mythology. And I mean, growing up in Ireland, everything you read, you're taught this kind of stuff in school. You learn about the Banshee and the Fianna and all these kind of people who lived off the land and lived in remote places. And there was something kind of psychogeographic about that. And there is also something about the idea that the land is alive, which is, again, some people, I think, when it comes to sort of movements around the environment and ecology, you know, it's a kind of the eco-poetic and all these ideas of that there's, you know, the land is a living, sentient thing. Somebody like, I mean, a writer like Rebecca Tamash, I don't know if you read her wonderful collection, Strangers, and she talks a lot about the land as a living kind of entity and various, and, you know, the idea of stones having a life. So I'm really interested in that. So it made sense to me that the island would be this kind of thing that maybe it's trying to say something, maybe it's trying to tell people things, and that could relate to history or stories. It could relate to, you know, ecological and climate disaster. But it definitely felt to me, that's quite a good observation that, you know, maybe it's alive, maybe it's not, but there's the sound is coming from somewhere.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You're listening to Little Atoms. I'm Neil Denny. Today I'm talking to Sinead Gleeson, and we're talking about her debut novel, Hagstone. And Sinead, let's talk for a while about the Inians, who are this group of women who live in a sort of commune in an old house on the island. And as you mentioned earlier, they basically get in contact. They quite surprisingly get in contact with Nell, because they don't really have that much contact with the rest of the island, to ask her to take on a commission. Tell us something about who they are.
Well, the Inneans are, the word Inneen is the Irish word for daughter. And these are a group of women who live in an old abandoned convent that's on the far side of the island. And they have chosen to cut themselves off from the world. I've been asked a lot about, like, you know, people have asked me, are they preppers? Are they a cult? You know, I think there's often a lot of suspicion around people who withdraw, people who want to exit from capitalist structures, who want to get away from the world, who don't want to deal with, you know, paying your insurance or electricity bills or, you know, school runs or whatever it is. And I think there's, you know, secretly, I think a lot of us fantasize about that in some ways, about going off to live in this kind of idyll where you didn't have to deal with all of the and I think the world has become, all of our lives, there are less boundaries, we're more on, we're working more, we're less present, we're all wrecked all of the time. And I think the idea of this is building this tiny democracy on the side of an island sounds to me quite compelling. One writer who was reading it just said, God, I really want to badly run off and join the Inneans, which I can relate to. But I think this all of us kind of feel that, I think, in some way, that there's an element of wanting to escape and live away. And in these women's way, again, like in the same way, I think Nell relates to them because she's been an object of suspicion and a little bit of derision because she's doing her own thing. And these women are not Nell and they're not artists, but they're definitely women who've chosen to live outside of the rules, to live outside of society. And often with groups like that, regardless of gender, people are immediately suspicious and think, you know, there's madness or wackiness there or something's amiss. When often it's just like, no, we just want something else that, you know, we don't want what everybody else wants. We don't want to live how everybody else is happy to live. We want something else. So I think that's what sparks her curiosity and why she says yes, because no one's really been behind the gates or the doors. No one really knows. And I think part of her feels that maybe she'll find something a little bit kindred with them, which is, I think, just why she goes and says yes.
Tell us something about some of the individuals within the group.
Yeah, I mean, they're a very mixed kind of bunch in age and background. They come from all over the world. They all have kind of different skills. Some of them are more receptive to her being there. Some of them are not necessarily, you know, they're against all outsiders coming in. So she has to sort of work very hard to gain some people's trust. But I wanted them to be, it made sense to me that they'd come from all over the world. Also, the setting is so, I've had such a visual image of where it's set in my head all the time that it just sounds like the kind of a really beautiful and alluring kind of place, this kind of bucolic sort of idyll that you literally could forget about the rest of the world. So there's one person in particular that Nell develops a very strong bond with, which is a woman called Murren. And she's like a basically not even green fingered, but green armed. She can grow anything because they're a very self-sufficient group. Also very good at growing weed, which kind of happens somewhere in the middle of the book. But I think Nell could, rather than trying to talk to them en masse and get everybody to like her, I think she gravitates towards Murren, who is kind of open and interested in her and trying to find out about, like, she's the one who asks Nell the most questions about, you know, why are you here? What do you do? What, tell me about your art. So I think it's trying to sort of, she didn't want to be one of them, but she wants to know about them. She's trying to understand why it is that they live this way and not another way.
And to what extent, I don't know, to what extent we can talk about this without giving too much away about the plot, but I just wanted to talk about what could we say about what effect does Nell's presence have on the group?
I think Nell is a little bit of a catalyst for the group in that, you know, it's the enter a stranger narrative in some ways, in that they've all been quite settled. You know, it's funny, when I had finished the book, and again, I don't want to say too much, I had finished writing it and I realised that Nell coming there in some way made no difference, that that things were already happening and in place. And I think maybe that she was just a little bit of a catalyst and speeded things up for what happens in the story. And I think she sort of made some of the people in the group, in all sort of groups, whether that's, you know, a workplace or a football team or a book club, despite the democracy and everybody's supposed to be on the same kind of level, I think one person always wants to be a little bit more in charge than everybody else. And the woman who runs the Inneans, Mammon, is the person who has invited Nell and is very keen, I think, sees something of herself in Nell. Maybe, I don't know whether that's a future self or a past self, but I think that her inviting Nell is a way of maybe trying to find an ally in some ways. So yeah, things are just changed quite a lot. Nell's behaviour, or Nell's arrival, sets in motion lots of parts of the story of the book.
So let's finish off then talking about the couple of men that pass through Nell's life in the story. So first of all, Cleary. Tell us something about who he is.
Oh, I love Cleary. I'm so fond of him. He's been off the island for quite a long time. And again, there is this thread all the way through the book, not just with Nell, but it's discussed many times, that if you live in a small, isolated place like that, community and society can be brilliant. And, you know, the social contract works and everybody gets on, but it's all, everybody knows your business. It's claustrophobic. You know, you know everybody. So I think Cleary had left at one point. He'd gotten married to somebody else and it didn't work out very quickly. So he comes back. We later find out why he's come back and they get involved. So I think he's very loyal, and I think he kind of catches her off guard because, again, she spent all her time going, I'm not getting involved with people. I don't want to fall for anybody. I don't want to have anything regular with anybody. And then he comes along and sort of turns her head a little bit. But he grapples with being back, and he doesn't, again, I don't want to say too much, but later on in the book, because he's not around for a certain reason, a famous American actor comes to the island who seems to want to employ her services as a kind of tour guide, which he does occasionally. But as it becomes very clear, that's probably not all that he wants. He was my chance to have it like a bit of, I think he's the part of the book where it could be kind of more playful, because I do think he's not based on any actors I know, disclaimer, but I do know a lot of actors. And I just think there's something about him coming to the island, the American, I think a lot of Americans feel this kinship with Ireland, and the way he goes. Also, everyone on the island, because whether they're being islanders or just being very Irish, all pretend they don't really know who he is, but everybody knows who he is. So I find him, I got to have a bit of fun with my portrayal of him.
To finish it off then, can I get you to read us a bit?
Sure. So this is the prologue, which kind of sets up the place and the voice. And it's an omniscient sort of voice, but you might figure out who it might be. Over townland and lake, over empty sheep dips and ancient walls, past the old convent high on the cliff where window frames gape like missing teeth, past the deep reservoir, drink, drink, and the forest fern fuzz, soar over hangnail hills and long grass to the dank forest of mulch floor, and tree roots swollen like limbs uncovered in the earth. In the bay, boats bob like flocked birds, above its stony crescent, a sturdy pier and the lighthouse. The sea is steady for now, the land readies itself. Back along the quiet, quiet roads full of blame, to that lovelorn cottage with the garden of herbs, past the ship-matted coats of sheep, the long vandalised phone box near the lighthouse tourists flock to, the pub with the walls glossed with years of paint, to the places they sometimes devoured each other. Over a woman carving loops on viscous sand, and a man on a fishing boat, nauseous and lonesome. Over the doomsday women singing in the sea. Can you hear it? Oh, Mammon. Oh, Rathglos. Over wildflower fields veined with ancient walls, tiny stone scars across the land. Over the rising sea and a woman carved into the rocks. Over pint drinkers slurp gossiping. Over the people who never left, over the strange sound that taunts, spreading notes over the hills, over all the places to hide, to seed from the world. Maybe that's why the innings came here.
So I've been talking to Sinead Gleeson. We've been talking about her debut novel, Hagstone, which is out now in the UK from Fourth Estate. Sinead, thank you so much for taking the time to tell me about it.
A total pleasure, Neil. Thank you so much.
This episode of Little Atoms was produced, presented, and edited by me, Neil Denny. Little Atoms is hosted by Acast and published by 89UP. The show is broadcast on Mondays and Saturdays on Resonance 104.4 FM. Thanks for listening.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.